It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news.
Host Boyd Matheson divides rage from reason
and elevates the conversation on issues crucial to our community.
On KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
A lot of ink has been spilled on how the United States' crazy permitting rules actually prevent green energy projects from getting off the ground. And with Congress seemingly in a state of perpetual gridlock or campaign mode or both, the question is there anything that can be done right now to fix some of those problems with permitting and get all kinds of projects from wind and solar to everything in between onto a little better path? If we're going to talk about it, let's actually make sure we can do it. And to help us figure all of that out, we turn to our expert on that and one of our great inside sources from the R Street Institute, Phil Rossetti. He's the R Street Institute's resident senior fellow, and he studies all things energy related and always provides us with what we need to know. So, Phil, you recently wrote about some of the permitting reform that needs to be done. And again, just to kind of set the stage for our listeners, just give us some sense of why it is that we need this kind of reform and what kinds of things are in the way to actually getting some of these climate and green energy projects off the ground.
Yeah, that's a great question, because this has been an exceedingly complicated topic, and I don't think it surprises anyone that as simple as it is to say permitting reform, actually doing it is very, very difficult, because permitting in the U.S. is not just about saying, okay, here's a project, we're going to let it happen and then move forward. Most of the permitting is done through something called the National Environmental Policy Act, which is what any sort of major federal project that has a significant environmental impact has to go through. And that is what we call an umbrella law. So it's actually ensuring compliance with all of the other laws, Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act, and all of that. So in promulgating this and trying to get through it, all of the underlying regulations that have grown have also made this a more complicated endeavor. And it used to take about 2 years, 2 to 3 years to get through this process. Now it takes about, 3 to 5 years usually, and it's not uncommon for projects to take 10 years or more. So we're seeing this real problem where we want to invest more, we want to build more, and you see a lot of politicians talk about their vision of more transportation infrastructure, more clean energy, but getting there actually is not easy to do in a timely fashion. And reforming this is something that Congress has tried to do in the past, and really some simple fixes could go a long way, but it is a very contentious issue because it touches so many environmental laws that people obviously want to have preserved and preserve the quality of the environment that we're all living in.
Yeah, and I think it's important to keep that in mind. This is not an either-or conversation. I think this is about how do you actually make sure that you are a good steward of the environment, do things that are positive for the climate, and do it in a way that actually can be done and have that positive impact. You mentioned that it's taking years to go through some of this permitting process, and that's often millions and millions of dollars. And so it actually starts to be counterproductive in terms of companies, entrepreneurial companies that maybe have great idea, great technology, things that would help the planet and the environment. But they have to calculate now and say, okay, are we really willing to bet, 4 years of our company's life and millions of dollars from investors or that we've earned over the years to take a flyer on some permitting process that we're not even sure we'll be able to do when we get all the way to the finish line?
Right. And it's definitely important to keep in mind that when we start looking at all the projects that are going through NEPA, it's not a lot of fossil fuel projects. It's renewable projects and clean energy and transmission and all of these things that we consider as important to a clean environment that are making up a bigger portion of the permitting snares. And this is just because those are the projects that we're building now. You know, we're not building new coal mines. We're not building, you know, a lot of new coal plants or infrastructure related to fossil fuels. A huge amount of the investment and almost all of the resources trying to get connected to the grid right now are clean energy related. So you can't get a cleaner environment without addressing the speed of actually building new things.
Yeah, so let's look at that speed and what some of those possible reforms might look like. What are some of the things that are coming up where we could change the game in terms of that whole process, speed that up, be responsible, and actually get some of these things done?
So I think a light touch actually has a lot more potential for benefit than is often talked about. Because when we look at why are these projects delayed, you know, people often point to, okay, you know, the regulatory burdens have grown. But a bigger factor is really the litigation risk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, public interest groups, which make up more than half of all of the litigations against NEPA decisions, have become very skilled at challenging any kind of record decision from the government. And the government loses about half of its NEPA cases. So it's become a significant factor where agencies preparing these environmental impact statements have to sort of play whack-a-mole. They don't know what is going to come down the pipe in a court case, so they just try to do everything they possibly can. And as a result, that's made the, you know, page counts of these documents and the preparation timelines explode. So really reining that in with a shorter statute of limitations or ensuring that any new litigation that comes against a project had to have at least submitted some sort of public comment when the project is actually being solicited for review from the public. That is something that we've done in the past for select projects. In 2015, actually, Obama signed into law as a Republican Congress that produced it. And that's something that I think we should just look at and expand and say, hey, you know, this worked really well for these projects. It did not reduce our environmental protections. It actually helped the environment. And this is something we can apply more broadly to other projects.
You also mentioned in your piece some additional things that could be helpful, including delegating some of that authority to the states to accelerate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something where we've seen that the federal government has a lot of problems with document duplication, where they, you know, they already have state-level documents and other laws that are complied with that have produced relevant assessments, but they're not always using them, and they don't always have an interest in using them. So getting more authority to states and ensuring that Congress says, okay, you know, here are the standards for what documents can be used in the process, those could have a big impact because that's going to alleviate a lot of the burden on federal agencies and put more of the workload on the agencies that actually have an interest in seeing these projects move quickly. And it's, you know, something worth considering and potentially could be in a permitting reform.
Yeah, fantastic. Great insight as always. Phil Rossetti, the R Street Institute's resident senior fellow, studies all things energy related, helps us on all of these kind of important reforms. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, and that's Phil Rossetti from R Street. And again, I think this is such an important thing to think through because often we hear these new programs, we hear about this new spending. You may recall from yesterday's program, we talked about all the money that had been allocated to study and look at rail and some other things here in the West. And so much of that will be tied up either in litigation or in a lot of these regulatory hurdles. And it prevents both public investments and private investments from actually paying off. And so being able to break that down the way Phil just did for us in terms of some simple policy changes, again, we can remain committed to a better, cleaner, greener kind of energy, things that are better for the environment, for the planet, and for the climate. But we have to make sure that as we go about those, that we don't overburden them with things that will prevent the projects from ever getting off the ground. All right, we'll step aside for a quick commercial break. When we come back, Olivier Knox is going to join us. Stay with us right here on KSL News Radio.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.